Welcome back to the Iron Insight. Thank you for starting your week off right with the Iron Insight every Monday morning at 4 a.m. I'm Bryn Welds.
And I'm Andrew Nichols with Southern Leatherworks.
Today, we're sitting down with Frank from Heffernan Studios. Did I say that right, Heffernan?
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. And so you're out of Omaha, and how I originally found you was through Facebook Marketplace. I saw a piece of your, or one of your sculptures, and I was like, man, where is this guy? Is he in Grand Island? Like, how have I not heard of this? And so then, anyways, from that, I went to Instagram, found you on Instagram, and started following along, because it's not really often that I get to find somebody else doing cool stuff with social media and metalworking in Nebraska as well.
Yeah, kind of a small world that way. That was pretty cool when you told me you're from Grand Island, you know?
Yeah. So I was wondering, like, you know, in Omaha, there's Metro. I don't really know all the colleges that offer welding programs, but how did you get into metalworking and welding?
Yeah, I was living in South Carolina for a few years, and I got a job making like steel windows and door frames. And that job didn't work out, but I kind of got hooked on like cutting metal and welding. So I just started, I had an apartment on the backside of a commercial building, and right behind my apartment was a muffler shop, and they let me crawl around in their dumpster and grab steel out of there. And I'd got just, you know, like a cheap, like a $50 welder and an angle grinder. Out of that dumpster, I got my work into 13 stores and 3 galleries.
No kidding. That's awesome. That's getting it done right there.
That's crazy. That's really all you need. A impressive cheap little welder and an angle grinder.
Yep. That's no excuses right there.
Yeah, I just bought myself a new a Miller 211.
There you go.
Busted it out yet, but they were doing like a rebate, so I went ahead and snagged one of those. I'm excited to put that baby to work.
That was my first welder that I bought, was the Miller 211. I actually still have it.
Nice.
So that's, you know, awesome, dude.
It's a good machine.
You know? Absolutely.
So you're not like formally trained through like a college or any kind of welding program like that?
Yeah, I never really had. I had like a 3-day crash course when I was making doors. And other than that, it just was kind of the school of hard knocks, you know? And with what I'm doing, I'm always trying to kind of like hide my welds to like make them pretty. So I'm always trying to like find that balance between like strength and like aesthetics. So it's been kind of a learning curve with just realizing like where to place the welds, you know, and like how to adjust the setting to make sure that something is strong enough to be an outdoor display somewhere like the Midwest where you get like high winds and things like that. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really love working with steel.
And I think I saw, this might've been like, this could have been over a year ago. I think you were sending a piece to Miami, and like, I never thought of how the metal artist would, like the logistics on how you're sending a sculpture across the country, you know, but it was you building a crate for a piece that.
Yeah, that's a sculpture I've done several renditions of called Ascension, where it's about 7 foot tall, and it's made out of, I usually use like 12 gauge steel plate that is cut into like rectangles or squares. And I smooth it up and kind of make it look like it's like floating away kind of. And those ones, I've got one in like California. I've got one in Maryland. I think I have one down in Florida. I got a couple here and there. One in Texas, Frisco, Texas. That was my first public commission. But yeah, shipping those ones. I got to custom build a big old crate like on a pallet, you know, so they can forklift it around, and all the bubble wrap and the packing peanuts and that kind of stuff. So I've never had one of those break in transit, which is great. That's a whole day's work on its own, just getting those packed up and ready to transport.
Absolutely.
Do you go to the installs in person?
You know, I like to when I can. Like, I just put that orange sculpture I put on my Instagram. That one was right here in like the Rockbrook neighborhood in Omaha. So something like that, being close enough to my studio, I just brought that over there, and I've got a team that I install with here. I'm going down to Naples. I have an install where I actually made like a wall-mounted sculpture, so I'm going to drive that down there and mount that myself, because I've got a gallery down in South Florida too that I'm going to pop by when in the area. But sometimes I'll just kind of send it off with sort of like an instruction booklet on like how to like move it, and you know, how to like pour the concrete and drill it in and all that kind of stuff. Because with the bigger ones, it's always good to like bolt it down to a cement pad so they're secured.
Absolutely.
That's kind of something that like you know, I sent you Clinton Lesh's episode just because it was the most recent that I was actually filming that day. And like Cody from Sage Country Customs in Gunnison, Colorado, a couple of these metal artists that we've had on in the past, they always say, like, if you go to the install, you know, you try and talk to the people who purchased it about the next project that they're wanting to work on. So, and I really didn't even think of like a manual or a booklet of instructions, but that also sounds like Alex Jordan from AM Custom Fab that we had on. He does a lot of the like large scale puppets for Disney and the Blue Man Group and stuff like that. So
yeah, it is always fun because a lot of times like the collectors that I've worked with, when you do have the chance to go there in person, they'll kind of like invite you into their home and they've got, you know, their own style and different pieces from different artists. And I've seen some really cool things. I had a collector in Ohio. He had a couple of Andy Warhol pieces and some Roy Lichtensteins in his house all framed up. And then I've met other artists actually that were like bringing in paintings or something like that when I was there to do like a sculpture. And it's a really fun experience working with folks. And I do, I like to make like custom pieces that are kind of site specific too. So it's always good to be able to go there and get like a feel for like the environment and things like that. Because I like, most of my sculptures are made for like indoor or outdoor display. And when you're able to kind of see where it's going and like get a visual on it, you can kind of custom tailor an artwork to be like both having a flow with the environment and also being like a focal point. So like a kind of a standout area in their garden or the yard or wherever it may be. So that's something that I really enjoy.
You're only about two and a half hours from Kansas City. Have you been to the Nelson Atkins Art Museum there?
I don't think I've been there. I did like art, a lot of art shows this year where I kind of drove around, did like a lot of East Coast stuff. And I was making it a point, every time I go to a city, I like to go to their big museum. So this coming year, I'm going to do some Midwest shows and I'll definitely check that out.
It's the real deal. It's crazy. So you drive up and it's like this big flat water fountain area. And then it's kind of like a turnaround area. But to the left is the modern art. And then straight at you, it almost looks like a, I'm sure it's a really old building, but it looks like something out of Rome, like with big pillars, and it's crazy. So in that front building is where it's like kind of more history, like there's mummies in there and stuff on display, and then each from a different region of the world as you walk through it. But on the modern art side, it's a super skinny, long area that like, the walls, it's pretty trippy when you're walking through it. But then once you make it out that back, the back area, they have this whole outside addition too, where you can play mini golf through the sculpture, not like into the sculpture, but like as you walk, there's sculptures all around you.
So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. It's lined up with a couple other historic buildings in Kansas City, but like I could totally see one of your art pieces in that modern art side or the outside.
So. That would be great. See, here in Omaha, they just they redid the Gene Leahy Mall downtown, and they have like a rotating sculpture exhibition in that outdoor park where they just, I think they just swapped them out again, but they've had some really wonderful pieces there. And then the Joslyn Art Museum just did a big remodel too, and they've got some really incredible work. They've got some John Chamberlain. They got a John Henry piece out front and a Joel Shapiro in the back. And they got a few by Rodin and some other notable folks. They had a nice mobile by an Alexander Calder mobile in their modern art section. But yeah, that stuff's really cool. And I am starting to look more into doing like public exhibition type work where I've got a piece right now in Pittsboro, North Carolina, a Red Ascension that's on display. And I've got work in a couple galleries on the East Coast, but here in the Midwest, I've got a couple of things kind of cooking up in the mix. You know, I'm not going to announce anything quite yet, but hopefully this year I'll be having a pretty good show.
We've got a sculpture walk here in Grand Island that actually yesterday was the last day to submit your sculpture or your idea for next year. But I'm going to have to
missed it. I didn't know about that.
It's in Ogallala, Broken Bow, Norfolk, Grand Island. There's a couple other towns that are involved in it. But I'm going to have to connect you with the guy that runs it, because he sends it to me because he knows like I'm a welder, but I don't have a creative bone in my body. So I've never submitted anything to it. But
yeah, if he's taking late submissions, I'd love to do that. Otherwise, I think Papillion might be joining that. They've got like a duck pond that they're starting to put sculptures around there. I was talking with, I think his name's Albert Rhea. He was kind of spearheading that movement. He's got a sculpture there, but I think they're working on getting some funding to have some more pieces on lease.
When you were talking about the Joslin, like that really makes me angry because our Airbnb was right next to it and we didn't go because I was just in Omaha yesterday and the day before.
Okay.
At the Orpheum for the Great Gatsby Ballet from the World Ballet Company. And
was it good?
It was actually like I didn't really know what to expect because I've been to a couple plays and stuff like that, but my wife was like pretty big into theater, like a theater kid. So
yeah,
I got us tickets to that because she had been talking about it for a long time, and Wicked, which they have Wicked every so often there too. And I was like, I'll do it. So we did it and we got to try out some like newish restaurants downtown that we hadn't been to, stumbled into a speakeasy by accident. Like,
nice.
We were looking at Google Maps and I was like, man, it says this bar, the Wicked Rabbit, is right across the street from the Orpheum. So we'll go there. And we're outside the building that it says that it's in, and it couldn't see a sign, a door or nothing. So I opened this small liquor store door where it says it is. It's like a 10x10 room with shelves full of bottles and stuff. And I was like, hey, do you know where the Wicked Rabbit is? And he was like, yep. And he opens the shelf and it's this whole like super chill room back there. And
hey, I'm gonna have to check that out. That's cool.
That was actually the password, like where's the Wicked Rabbit or something. That's the password to get in. So we just got lucky with that. But yeah, it was super sweet. And we drove by the Joslin getting to our Airbnb like four separate times. And I was like, should we go? Because that's kind of how I felt with the Nelson Atkins that I was talking to you about in Kansas City is,
yeah,
like I had never been to an art museum. I went to tons of museums in like DC and whatnot, but never to an art museum. And like, it was a lot cooler than I thought.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. I was at, I did a show in Chicago. I was up there selling some stuff and they have a big museum there. And they had a Frida Kahlo exhibition that was just really, really cool to see that much of her work in one spot. And they also had, they brought in a bunch of like marble statues from like Italy and like Rome and all that. And I don't know how they transported all these works, but that really kind of like opened my eyes as to like how many incredible stone sculptors there were back in the day, you know, because every piece had a different artist and they were just perfect. Every single one. It was almost a little disheartening walking through all those amazing artworks. But, you know, with steel, I mostly focus on like abstract work, because something about it, like when you're making something abstract, really all you're working with is like color and form. And it's almost kind of an instinctual thing where sometimes I'll have like a drawing, like an idea of something that I want to make. But like this piece behind me right there, and a lot of the piece I've been doing with the gazing ball, I'll get all the components and I'll like clean them up and make them pretty. And then when I'm assembling them, it kind of like everything kind of changes, you know, because I sort of I'll lay things out just on the ground or on the table. But then once it starts like becoming three-dimensional and you're starting to get like depth and things, I spend a lot of time kind of just tinkering around with it, you know, and then sometimes it'll be a little more spontaneous where I just like to put everything together really fast, you know, and then clean it up after the fact. But abstract work, I really, really enjoy making because I like the idea of making something that I've never seen before. You know, that's kind of what I'm always chasing after, is to just make something new.
Have your sculptures always been like as large as, you know, you said Ascension was 7 feet. Like, did you start off small scale and eventually work your way up, or have they always been kind of on the larger side?
Yeah, my very first sculptures that I did, actually, I made some little Christmas decorations and I put them in a tin box and I put on a suit, and I was living in Inman, South Carolina, small town. And I went door to door with my tin box and I had some business cards, and I'd be like, I'm Frank Ifrin, I'm a sculpture artist. You know, do you want to sell some of my artwork? And I got to one store and I Sorry, my cat's causing a mess over there. I sold a couple Christmas decorations to a hairstylist there. That was my first sale.
That's awesome.
Pretty small. And then I worked a lot and eventually started making some bigger things. And with sculpture, my next move is I'm going to make a few pieces that are kind of in like the 15 to like 25 foot tall range, because people a lot of times won't, you know, I could tell someone I could do that, but they won't believe you unless they've seen that you've done it before. So I've always kind of trying to like break through into doing things that I haven't done before, you know, so that way I can keep myself interested.
We recently heard in Chicago at FabTech that there's like some of the music festivals and Burning Man, for example.
I saw that on that last podcast you did.
Had you heard about that before? Like, where you can submit an idea, kind of like the sculpture walk here in town, where you submit an idea or you already have something built, and then they'll give you a grant for the materials and like your travel and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I'm starting to kind of get more in tune with, is like the opportunities for public exhibition and things like that. And it makes sense, because, you know, you always go to these cool events and there's artwork everywhere, you know, they must be curating it somehow. So once I do start making some things that are a little bit more, I think, like substantial, I feel like that would be more in line with like public exhibition type stuff. And I mean, I have a few of those Ascension sculptures that are on public exhibition, but I want to just make something really big. I don't really know why. I just have like this urge to make something huge. I'm going to have to get a crane or something to haul around, you know?
It's something that, like, I think is becoming a lot more common, because when we were at FabTech in Chicago again, which is a metal fabrication convention that like rotates cities every year. So it'll go, It was Orlando 2 years ago, then Chicago, next year's Vegas. There was talks that they're going to have like a sculpture exhibition the whole show, because it's like 50,000 attendees for 3 days, you know?
Hey, yeah.
And so that's a rumor. I don't know anything. I'm not a part of FabTech. Like, I don't know nothing about it, but
yeah.
I heard that they were going to have like kind of a sculpture walk throughout all the like common passing areas in it.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Because there's a ton of metal artists there that are like, they walk around with their pieces and show these companies so that, you know, they can either work with them, or a lot of the booths at the show will display a piece of metal art. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I like that.
I think that's coming a lot more popular, though.
I've never been to like FabTech or like a welding type event. I think that would be pretty cool.
It is. It is a lot of fun.
It really like depends on the convention center, because in Chicago, one room will be all welding, one will be all like shaping and forming metal, and then one will be all painting and powder coating. So
yeah, see that that's something that I really like, is, you know, when I started, I didn't really have any tools. You know, I had an angle grinder and a welder, and that was about it. So I was, you know, if I was bending a piece of steel, you know, maybe some like 14 gauge or some 12 gauge, I was doing it just cold by hand, you know? And recently I've gained access to like a big slip roll and a break and things like that. And that's really been big for me to be able to kind of like take my artwork with my sculptures to the next level. Because it's, you know, a lot more, like, I'm able to bend and form metal that I can't do by hand, you know? So that's been really exciting for me to kind of start being able to use stuff like that. And then now that I got that new miller, I just got to set up a 240 plug so I can start. Because that thing, you cook into, like, I think it was 3/8 of an inch steel, one pass. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you can make something rugged with that.
It's crazy that you've been able to do what you have so far with what you've had, you know, the equipment limitations, or maybe even like, I don't know. That's just kind of wild. What did you say? 13 stores and three what? And
three galleries. Wow. Yeah. Most of that was like smaller stuff. Cause see, I started out making more, the first couple pieces I made were really pretty. They're really lovely, but they took a lot of time and I just didn't have like a market. You know, I didn't know anyone that would be able to give me a living wage for something pretty like that. So I started making like yard art out of like old mufflers. I'd make like muffler men and like little snakes and creatures and things like that. So that did really good with like garden centers. And while I was moving those things, I was making like really pretty stuff kind of on the side, you know, and just kind of honing my skills. And I slowly transitioned to the point where now I can spend pretty much all of my time just working on like fine art, because that's really what I enjoy doing. It's just, you know, always kind of like pushing to make something new again and again. And lately I've been on kind of like the gazing ball kick, where I've been making a lot of sculptures with the stainless steel, but I hand paint all of my stuff right now. I made an ascension, but with like ribbons and stuff. I called it Albatross. I made that and is hand painted the powder coating ovens. No one has ovens big enough to powder coat stuff that size. So I think I'm going to end up probably like building a big powder coating oven or something. You know, I've got a whole list of activities that I need to do, but I'm always looking for like different finishes and things like that. I've done a few pieces like mirror polished stainless steel and things like that. And I've seen some people use like a translucent automotive paint over a mirror polish, and you get like a really cool kind of like liquid effect coming off of it. And I got another friend here in Omaha who works on cars, and he's repainting this old truck that he got going, you know, like one of those cool old Fords, I think it is, might be a Chevy, but he uses flake paint, like auto, so it looks like almost like glitter, you know, put some clear coat over it and it's smooth. So there's a lot of things I'm interested in doing, but for now I just hand brush on like an oil-based enamel and a few coats of that. It's the same kind of paint they use on like heavy machinery. I just buy the primary colors and custom blend all the colors up, but it's good for outdoor and indoor display.
Nice. Do you have an active count on how many pieces you have out there? Or like if I were you, this is just something that I would want to do. I'd have a map, put a pin in every single location.
Yeah, I kind of have like a running list. I've been sculpting professionally for about 2 years now. My first year, I sold over 500 pieces. And I think to date, I've probably sold around like 1,000 pieces or so.
That's crazy.
I stopped.
That's awesome.
Stop keeping track.
Yeah. When I started, I work like all the time, and I would work sculpting for, you know, like 15 hours a day, 18 hours a day, just kind of like nonstop all the time. And I'd do all that, and I'd maybe sell, you know, like a sculpture for like $40 or something, you know? So it'd be like, I'd be working 12 hours a day for nothing really. But I just, there's some part of me that just really believed in it for some reason. And I really enjoyed it. So I just kept, you know, pushing it further and further. And it's, now it's going along pretty well. And I'm able to just do what I really love doing all the time, which I feel very blessed to have that kind of thing going on. It's a lot of fun.
Do you have somewhere in Omaha where they can, or somebody who's maybe interested or a business can come see some of your artwork?
You know, I had some artwork in the inaugural exhibition at Clover 24, which is kind of like a new gallery space where artists also have like their studios there. And this coming year in June, we've discussed me bringing in like a decent sized show. They might even have some outdoor space where I can put in some bigger pieces. So we haven't like locked in a date or anything for sure yet, but they're really great people there. And that would probably be my first big exhibition here in Omaha.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that.
Are you from Omaha originally?
Yeah, I was born in Lincoln, but we moved to Millard when I was like one or two, and then I grew up in Omaha.
How'd you make your way out to, you said you lived in Florida for a little bit, in South Carolina?
Yeah, I've been all over the place. Actually, I went to college in Florida. I actually got a degree in biology. And then I went to medical school in South Carolina. I wanted to be a surgeon. So I went to medical school for a few years. But while I was in medical school, I'd opened up a pet store to kind of like make ends meet. And in the third year of medical school, I started working in the hospital, and it just wasn't really like the right fit for me as far as like a job and all that. So I ended up dropping out of school and running my pet store for a few years. And then I made an exit from the pet industry, and I didn't really know what to do. And that's when I'm unemployable. I put out probably 100 job applications, and I got the one job that they said artist assistant. And I was like, okay. But it turned out that's where they were making like the luxury windows and door frames, you know, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I told the guy, you know, I've never worked with metal before. And then he started, you know, I went in this the first day or second day, he was like, all right, you're going to be the master fabricator. And I was like, what? And then the third day I was fired via text message. So I was like, ooh. He let me crawl around in his dumpster. So, you know, getting fired from that job might just be the best thing that ever happened to me.
So how did you get into art then originally?
You know, my grandfather was an artist. He had an advertising agency kind of in like the Mad Men era of advertising. So he always, growing up, he was retired by the time when I was relatively young. He would do like chainsaw carvings and watercolors, and he would do like clay sculptures and things like that. So when I was a kid, I always wanted to be an artist, you know, and growing up, I kind of like branched away from that. But then it just kind of came back to me in a really interesting way, you know, where I didn't really know what to do. And it just stuck, and I got hooked on it. And, you know, I make paintings, I sell paintings, and I do portraits and drawings and things too. But for the last couple of years, sculpting steel has just really, because I've always been real active, you know, I grew up in the tools and stuff like that. So there's something about just like, you know, you've got to pull all the safety features off your angle grinder and there's fire blowing everywhere, you know, something about just like the experience of sculpting. It's like, it's so intense, like when you're doing it, that you can't really think about anything else, you know? And I just really like that, like total immersion in the process of sculpting.
You're talking about a 15 to 25 foot sculpture. So I'm going to assume you're not limited on space.
Yeah, I have, I've got a good shop with tall ceilings, and I just got a property in the country where I've got a couple of acres, and I've got like a detached garage and a barn and stuff that I'm kind of slowly tricking out into my perfect habitat, you know? But I'm kind of starting to get to the point where I'm kind of like a roll with the punches kind of guy, because especially as an artist, things happen in such a way that it's like, it's almost kind of unpredictable. You know, sometimes I'll be like super busy and running behind on everything, and then I'll have some time to kind of focus and like grow and like try new things, you know, so that I can learn how to do the things that I can't do yet. Sorry, I got my cat down here again. But yeah, my next, I got just like an urge to make something big, a couple really big pieces. And I don't know exactly how to do them yet, but I've got a few friends who are engineers, and I've got a few friends who are like, they're like pipe fitters, do like automotive welding and stuff. So I've got a good support system to make sure that everything is like safe and sound, and I've got the room to do it. So I'm just going to kind of go for it.
That sounds like kind of a common struggle to balance, like for an artist, whether, you know, you got 70% or 80% of your time working on something that you're going to get paid for, but you want to explore in this way and try this. But nobody's going to pay me to try to do this yet until you can kind of pick and choose what you want to build.
Yeah, and I've been fortunate that a lot of my commission work is people will see other work that I've done, and they'll want something kind of similar but different. And that always works well with me, because I expand on my work kind of constantly, where it's like I'll make something similar, but I have a vision where I want to like change it in this way or that way. So a lot of times people are pretty open to the direction I want to go with it. But it is always on my mind, like trying something new, you know, and kind of like staying true to the process of just like expanding my understanding of the materials, and to be able to express my way, like express myself and the things that are on my mind through like a visual form. And sometimes I get a little bogged down, and I have to kind of like break loose and just kind of go on like a side quest for a few days, you know, and just get a few designs out of my system. But it's kind of an interesting thing, because every time I do something new, you know, I don't know how it's going to be received, you know, and I've found that if I trust like my own kind of instincts when it comes to artwork, and I make something that I really enjoy, other people have tended to enjoy it too, which has been good. So I kind of just follow my spirit when it comes to new designs, and we just see how the public likes it when it's all over, you know?
Yeah. Have you always kind of played with the finish on the surface of the material, or is that something new? Because I saw you had posted like more of a rusted patina style piece.
Yeah, I really like I like rust. There's something about rust, especially if you can find like a really old piece of metal. Like I know some people who have like, you know, just old shops that have been passed down through the family, and I'll go ruffling around in there and I'll find like, I don't know, like a half inch rod that just is like so rusty that it's like almost decaying, you know? Where I got, I bought some steel from a bridge that was taken down in Missouri. And I brought some pipes that were old irrigation pipes. So they'd been underground for like 50 years. And you just get this like this texture and this color. And even if you have new steel and you apply a patina, it almost makes the steel feel more natural, you know, because when you put like a high gloss finish or like a paint job or a polish or something like that on metal, it can almost look like futuristic, you know, it can look like high tech. And it's cool to take something like that as kind of like hard and processed as metal and make it feel organic. Something about that I really like. So I do, I kind of alternate between, like if I have stainless steel, I like to kind of leave that raw. So I like to like polish stainless, painted finish or natural patina. I really like the look of that. That was that piece, the Ascension I sold in, it's in Jarelli Square in Frisco, Texas. They've got a rustic patina, you know, that Texas vibe, you know. I got some patina pieces in like Nevada and like New Mexico and stuff. And Chicago loved the patina when I was in Chicago.
There's you saying going through old shops that were like passed down throughout the years of a family reminded me of this thing I saw. There's a guy called Welder Up Vegas, and he bought a property out in the middle of the desert with a bunch of structures on it. He'd been working in this shed for like the past 2 years, and just this past weekend found a box with over 60 sticks of dynamite. And he called the cops, and they shut down the whole city, because if it would have blown, it was like the equivalent to like 1.5 million PSI or something.
Dang.
Yeah. He was working right next to it for 2 years, this old box.
And he was welding and cutting metal and yeah, blowing sparks all over a box of dynamite.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Oh my gosh. Guy had a guardian angel watching over.
Yeah, it's crazy. And actually, Vegas, it seems huge for metal art. Like, you think of all the casinos there, they all have something. There's a guy named Kevin Stone that I've been following for a while. He does some big pieces of metal art that are like, just like you're saying, when you say mirror polish stainless, like that's such a time commitment that I can't, the last thing I want to do is polish something to a mirror finish.
Yeah, the best part about a mirror polish finish is you don't know if you've done it wrong until you do the final buff. You know, like if you missed a spot with one of the grits, then you've got, you know, it's just all marred up in one spot and you got to do it all over again. I got to, here, let me show you this piece real quick.
That makes me think of when we went to see the bean, Andrew.
Yeah.
While we were in Chicago.
Garbage bean. Piece,
you know, where it's kind of got
that
mirror finish to it. This is the only sculpture I've ever almost smashed on the ground out of rage. I was very, very ending it all, because I did the mirror polish and it had, you know, a little defect. I was like, all right, I'll do it one more time. And I finished it out and it was just bad. I was like, no, I did it again. It was still bad. I was like, no, that's when it was almost, I almost just chucked the thing. But I did it one more time and it turned out about as good as it was the first time. And I was like, that's good enough.
Man. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, a little mirror polish. It's fun though. You can get some really cool optical effects with a mirror polish. Not just like, I have another piece where I did like a concave mirror and it like inverts the image that it reflects. So everything's upside down. And then you can, like the light reflections that come off it too are really interesting. Like when the sun's bouncing off it and it hits the walls, you get kind of like a liquid sort of visual effect, which is super cool.
That's kind of like, I was just telling Andrew how, because we were both in Chicago last month, and I've been to Chicago over 10 times, never went to see the Bean. So we went to the Bean, at night, actually. Yeah, it was like sunset. But, you know, the thing is, like, you're supposed to walk under it and go to the middle and look up. And it's a super trippy effect because of the way that that moves light. But, yeah.
I went. That was right next to the museum there. I went and seen that before I went into the museum. Yeah, that's impressive. You know, it's just seamless, you know. The way they polished that thing up was...
It's great. Way bigger than I thought.
Yeah, that's a piece. That's Anish Kapoor. He's got... Yeah, he has a few mirror polished pieces that are really cool. And then he's the one who's got that special material that's like the blackest black. So it just kind of absorbs all the light. He's made a couple pieces with that kind of stuff.
What do they call that? I can't remember, the phantom black or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I've never seen it in person, but yeah, he's got a couple other interesting pieces where he'll just do like, just take raw pigment and just have like a big pile of pigment. It's really interesting to get that kind of like texture and depth out of something that, you know, because steel is such like a permanence that I'm starting to kind of work with like wood and stone a bit more. And I'm sure eventually I'll move into like kind of like textile type sculptures, because it's really just interesting when you get like malleability to a substance. And, you know, I've made a few sculptures that you can kind of like rearrange in space, you know, like a freestanding piece that doesn't really have a top or bottom. And I like the concept of like having a kinetic effect, or even being able to like rearrange an artwork depending on, you know, what you're interested in seeing that day. I think that's kind of fun to have like an interactive type piece.
Yeah. Have you made any kinetic sculptures that like actively move?
I've made a few pieces that have some movement to them, but I'm going to make a few chandeliers that will have some movement to them. And I also just got a hold of some ball bearings. So I'm going to make some things that'll like spin in the wind and that kind of thing. I'd like to eventually get like a motor, like make like a motorized pedestal so that they can just kind of like plug that in and then it'll just like slowly rotate all day. I think something like that would be really cool too. So far, I haven't made any really intensely kinetic artwork, but it's on my to-do list.
There was a TV show on Netflix called Metal Shop Masters a couple years ago. It was kind of like Ink Masters, but for metal. One of their things was they had to make a sculpture that looked like something, you know, just looking at it. But the shadow had to be something different.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was crazy. They had like, I don't know, maybe like 40 hours to do it. I don't know. I would have fully panicked from like concept to in real life. Like,
yeah.
I'd probably walked out.
I like things like that where they kind of like transform depending on like how you're looking at them. And with something like sculpture, a lot of people do like to light them up at night, which is cool, you know. And I do try to make things so that like no matter what side of it you're looking at, it's interesting and pretty to look at. But I do want to start kind of like playing with like light and perspective like that, or maybe, you know, you go around to one side of the sculpture and you see something completely different. You know, I've been thinking about something like that. I saw a video online that it was real popular, I think a year or so ago, around Art Basel, Miami. There was an artist who made sculptures out of just like old like toys and things like that. And like from the front, it would look like a bird or something. But from the side, it just looks like, you know, like a pile of junk and stuff like that. I think is really interesting when you can play with perspective in that way.
Yeah, I think so, too. It blows me away because, like I say, I don't have a creative bone in my body. Like, I can understand the welding on a sculpture, but I'm like, I could never build it. But
it is, it's kind of, it's fun. Sometimes I will get kind of in like a mental rut where I won't know exactly what to do. And whenever I kind of get stuck like that, I usually just try to kind of like, you know, just turn my brain off and just do like anything at all, you know. And inspiration, it'll always find you, you know, but it's best to be busy. That's when it hits, is when you're like actively engaged in something. You'll just kind of realize a new way to, you know, present something or a new way to arrange something. So I like staying busy. That's kind of what keeps my mojo flowing, you know?
Yeah. Well, we got about 45 minutes of good footage. Here's something we ask every single guest before we end each episode. What is your favorite genre of music to listen to while you work or weld?
Ooh, you know, I listen to all kinds of stuff, but probably the most common genres are either going to be like rock and roll, you know, like AC/DC, Zeppelin, Sabbath, some stuff like that, some Dio. Otherwise, I've been listening to like EDM music. I like Crystal Castles and Fisher and just some other kind of like electronic music like that. Because sometimes I don't want to hear or understand what they're talking about in a song. You know, you just kind of want to like get in the zone and just turn into a robot, you know?
Yeah, those are probably our two most popular answers, is either EDM sure. or rock.
I guess you got to listen to something loud, you know, because you plugs in, you're grinding away, so you got to like get that beat kind of thumping, you know, so you can at least feel it, even if you can't hear it.
Yeah. It's no, yeah.
But then some days I'll have my hippie days, you know, listen to just like Grateful Dead all day long, you know. I'm having like a nice sunny morning if I'm up before noon. You can do some of that.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We'll have your social media links. And if you have a studio or a website, I'll find that. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. To everybody listening, check him out. Please leave us a review on whatever platform that you do listen on. The Everlast Welders upgraded Nova Torch and Foot Pedal free of additional charge if you order through the link in the show notes, either Andrew's or mine, and Edge Welding Cups, code BrynWelds15, and the link in the show notes as well. And Andrew?
And you can check out sunleatherworks.net for all your custom welding hood and leather gear needs. And as Bryn said, my Everlast link is also in the show notes. Mr. Frank, we really appreciate you coming on. We enjoyed talking to you about your artwork, and you've been all over the place, and you've done quite a few crazy things, and we look forward to seeing what you do next.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on today. I had a lot of fun talking about what I'm up to, so thank you very much, and happy to come back on anytime.
Absolutely.